Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 656. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. Just enjoying not watching Raw.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I will probably end up posting this the same time I normally do. For consistency's sake. But hey, why not? Everyone is, I do think in general, SmackDown still gets the short shrift in the scheme of things. We have complimented it quite a bit. We've talked about some storylines here and there. But come Tuesday recording time, most of the time, it is a little further out of the cranium. And hey, little day earlier, a little fresher in the memory banks, and we get to miss out on some of the shenanigans of Raw, but one of which we will talk about eventually. But let's stick to SmackDown, like the plan was. And it would be remiss of us not to. I think we talked about the speculation last week. But it was made concrete at the end of this past week's SmackDown that Daniel Bryan is no longer welcome on SmackDown in edict of the tribal chief.
He has in fact been banished. Yes, by our tribal chief and the head of the table. What a piece of business that ended up being.
They gave that plenty of time.
Yeah. Oh, they did. That match was absolutely fantastic. That is going to be on many people's ballots for best match of the year as we go on with the year. I would say it was better than anything at WrestleMania.
Yeah, there wasn't a really crazy memorable match at WrestleMania this year. So, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that includes commercial breaks. You know, I'm going to assume that thing probably would have...
The match was absolutely tremendous.
Turned out better had it been on pay-per-view. But yeah, that match was really, really good. Like, I was glad that I had tuned in live for that one. It definitely was worth it. You know, like...
Absolutely, yeah.
So, kudos to both Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan for really telling quite a story there. And making the match, while there could be a size differential, you know, Daniel Bryan really, did a great job of, you know, picking on a body part, and really making sure it weakened his opponent. So things, worked out really, really, really well.
Yeah, it absolutely was just a fantastic match, a great story told. Told throughout the evening, having always good when they have, and it obviously it's not something that can be used all the time when they ask other wrestlers what they think about the match coming forward and making and giving their predictions. You know, really setting the table for it. It felt like a big deal. It was a big deal. And Roman Reigns defeated Daniel Bryan, sending him on his way off of SmackDown with not just a loss, but a concerto as well. So that could very well spell a something of a sabbatical for one day, Daniel Bryan, before he lands wherever he's going to land.
Yeah, I feel like it seemed like he was ready to take some time off. So that is definitely one way to solve that problem.
Yes.
And keep some heat on one Roman Reigns. Not really necessary, but you know, that really helps dial it in there. So yeah, like the angle was done well. Obviously the right person won. Daniel Bryan can do whatever is next, you know, like everyone seems to be up in the air about what his contract status is exactly.
There's something of that note of when it's up and when it isn't that I'm very confused by that situation, so I am not going to speculate. Interestingly, WWE did, you know, I think following through with the storyline, move him to the alumni section of their roster on the website, which is a good attention to detail, if nothing else. I don't, yes, again, I'm not going to speculate on his contract status or where he's going to end up next. But you know, they gave him a hell of a send off, and also transitioned Roman Reigns to his next feud as well.
Yeah. Yes, they did. And I guess it isn't surprising that it's Cesaro.
No, not at all, no. Cesaro ran down after the match and to help Daniel Bryan and was something of a house of fire with his European uppercuts, you know, absolutely wailing Roman Reigns with those before Jey Uso got involved, tying Cesaro on the ropes and making him watch Roman Reigns hit Daniel Bryan with the aforementioned concerto. So that was really good. You got Cesaro on Friday Night SmackDown this coming week, facing Seth Rollins again. Let's see how that goes. I really hope that they keep Roman Reigns and Cesaro a singles match and don't try to pull anything with Seth Rollins being involved. But we'll see how that goes. I don't think they will. I think I don't know if Cesaro is going to get to pin Seth Rollins again. But I don't think he's going to lose this match either. I pretty much went on the record and saying guaranteeing he's not going to lose this match.
Yeah, that's a good way to term it. He might not win it, but he's not going to lose it.
No.
You know, if there's some type of DQ finish, I would be unsurprised by that happening. I'm not sure that you necessarily want Seth Rollins taking another loss if you're going to use him as a top heel. Not to say that he couldn't bounce back from it, but he could also use to... well, actually, I'm a little bit split. Like, there's still maybe a little bit of selling that could be done for Cesaro, but he is in a really strong spot to just take on Roman Reigns at this juncture.
Yeah, he absolutely is. You shouldn't have to do things again. You shouldn't have to beat someone at Seth's caliber again. But then again, they also don't need to do the match again either. by that logic. That's difficult TV time, but that's the world we're living in right now. I think we're going to get a Roman Reigns versus Cesaro singles match to headline WrestleMania Backlash.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why we would not, like, it would be interesting if Roman Reigns starts flaking on some of the minor pay-per-views and saying that his time isn't well spent there. That would kind of crack me up, but I could also see him having a big enough ego that he needs to be on the show, or else no one's going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. The show needs him. He doesn't need the show.
So yeah, there's a couple of ways you can roll with that one. But yeah, I would imagine that that feud really just in general is probably going to run longer than just WrestleMania Backlash anyway. Would you think the same thing?
I am actually not sure on that one. We shall see what they do with that, but I don't see it any other way than Roman Reigns beating Cesaro clean. There's ways to get another match out of it, but right. I don't know if that's the direction they're gonna go. Yeah.
It's definitely not. Unfortunately for Cesaro, he did get to take the step of winning a singles match at WrestleMania, but it's not quite time for him to get the championship.
No, and I'm not sure that particular time will ever come.
Yeah, it is conceivable that it might not ever come, but. It has been kind of interesting seeing him finally get that breakthrough moment that he seemingly has been trying to get to for a while, only to be kind of cut short again in fairly short order. It will be interesting to see what happens with Cesaro after he ends up transitioning out of this feud with Roman Reigns. Another feud that is getting an extension of sorts, but is also involving... It seems like WrestleMania Backlash is the place for multi-person matches. And Big E and Apollo Crews have found themselves a couple of extra dance partners.
Yes, they absolutely have. They've been integrating the issue between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn into the Intercontinental title issue for the last couple of weeks. I'm doing it, you know, fairly well with Owens and Big E both you know, challenging Apollo in consecutive weeks and running into Commander Aziz, you know, thwarting them at every turn. And of course, Sami Zayn has still been a thorn in the side of Kevin Owens while also never giving up his quest to regain the Intercontinental Championship as well. So it all fits together. It's, you know, better than having to do another Big E Apollo Crews match where Big E has to, as they say, do the job again. So that's fine. You can do a four-way, and then if the long-range plan is for Big E to challenge for the Universal Championship at some point in the future, let's separate him and Apollo Crews from each other after this.
Yeah, he could definitely move on to bigger and better things. Like you know, Seth Rollins is kind of the easy guy to point out since he does not have the championship currently. But he is kind of a perfect gatekeeper for the main event also, for him to move to.
Yeah, he absolutely is, yeah. I mean, you don't necessarily want him continuously playing that role, and so maybe you don't exactly have Big E beat him right away, but but definitely, yeah, Seth is absolutely, while he's the number two heel, he's going to fulfill some gatekeeper responsibilities, yes. And a Big E Seth feud is something we haven't... Singles feud is something we haven't done, so... Yeah, it would absolutely work.
I don't know how soon that's going to be, but I could see something like that. Like, Big... I was using Rollins as an example. I would hope that, like you said, mainly for the reasons that you said... That I wouldn't want to see Rollins take that loss right now. If they have someone else, and I don't have a name in mind to fill in before that. Big E can transition away from Apollo and keep moving up the ladder. Yep. Which
and,
they need,
and
really.
Yeah, they blew. And speaking of WrestleMania Backlash, or Backlash in general, being the multiple person match show, officially the Raw Women's Championship match at WrestleMania Backlash is going to be Rhea Ripley versus Asuka versus Charlotte Flair now.
Yeah, that is a little bit of...
two triple threat matches from Raw.
Yeah, and honestly, the one was used to justify, quite literally used to justify the other.
Yeah.
It's just like, hey, the men's is a triple threat match, why not make ours a triple threat match? Like, all things are equal, right? We need to have the same number of contenders.
Oh. Oh, okay. Kevin actually has watched Raw, been watching Raw on and off since we've been since we're doing the show tonight. Me, I am brutally honest in saying I will use any excuse not to watch Raw from week to week. Although maybe next week I'll be drafted.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be watched without sound. Like, I'm not going back to watch this. In any way, right, shape, or form. So, that stuff got heard, though, the triple threat match. And, you know, it is kind of interesting. Sonya Deville has really... Adam Pearce confronted her on screen a couple of times. But what the actual hierarchy is still hasn't really been cleared up, and Sonya Deville has suffered zero consequences still for all of her decisions. So it's kind of interesting, but I'm not sure either. You know, like, it.
Yeah.
How's it gonna lead somewhere? Like, yeah. What is an Adam Pearce versus Sonya Deville feud gonna lead to? Like, I that part I'm a little lost on. It could be an introduction of a McMahon again, which would be completely unsurprising. But I mean, I wouldn't have cared if Adam Pearce just gave her SmackDown to run on her own or something like that. Like, I don't need some weird schism between the two of them. Like, just not really necessary.
Right.
So, but honestly, that was not the most interesting news on Raw. I would say that the most interesting news on Raw was the fact that Eva Marie is officially on her way back to the WWE.
Oh, the evil illusion is upon us. Oh, my God. Rumors of her return have spanned probably back a year or more. And it's finally happening. Ah.
Yeah, like, her return kind of felt evergreen at some point to me, so I stopped ignoring... Or I started ignoring all the rumors, so when I actually saw it pop up, I'm like, what?
Right.
And it was kind of funny that the wife even went, she looks familiar. And then when I told her she was on the first season of Total Divas, she's like, oh, she's married to that douchebag. I'm just like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that guy is a douchebag. Apparently they are still married. I was hoping she would at least smarten up about that thing, because that guy's he's the one who tanked her career and convinced her to leave WWE in the first place. I believe that's the story.
Yeah. So I am thoroughly confused about this situation. She was not good in the ring 4 years ago. The women have done nothing but get better in the ring since she's...
Well, not all of them.
Well...
Not all of them. In fact, it might be approaching half of them have not, but
this is true.
What would your dog say?
If she wants to, I guess to go back to, you know, maybe I'm backpedaling a little bit, but it's also something we say on the show a lot. To be in the main event, you definitely need to be able to wrestle.
Yes. Yes, of course. Yes. That is absolutely true. Yes. To get in that top echelon of the WWE Women's Division, absolutely yes. Yeah, she was not a good wrestler. She had some charisma. She obviously a great look. But yeah, it's a weird pickup. It'll be interesting to see where they go. Once again, they keep wanting to have this woman on the roster who is, you know, the throwback to the Diva era, but then they always drop it as well. with Emma and with Carmella, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some in between.
Oh.
But yeah, it's an odd signing at this point to bring her straight back up to the main roster, and I assume with a pretty big push coming. You see why she's an office favorite. So
right.
Yeah, and if we really believe that the attitude on women's wrestling is regressing within WWE, well, this could be some pretty good evidence towards that.
I don't see that she, I always felt, was she trained by Brian Kendrick?
Yeah, she was. You know, she wasn't the, here's the thing, actually, and someone brought this up, like, they actually did a bit on Total Divas with her training with Brian Kendrick.
Uh-huh.
And just like, and Alicia Fox commented, who in the women's division is going to base for all of that? Which is actually kind of true, because you've seen the videos of Alexa Bliss working out with Mike Quackenbush before he was canceled, and then you see Liv Morgan posted some videos of her, you know, wrestling in a ring, you know, doing with a male training partner, doing all sorts of flippy-doos and stuff. It's like, you know, there is a point where it's just like, who can you do that with?
Oh,
it's not Dana Brooke, who is now the subject of tonight's gift du jour, with her failed handspring elbow into a chop block from Charlotte Flair. That I have seen over and over and over again tonight.
Yeah, Dana Brooke is definitely one of the women that has not improved at all. Like, she is not a mystery as to why she's where she's at. Like, honestly, she's, to me, gotten a fair shot, because they keep on giving her a chance every now and again, and every now and again, it does not go well. And it's just like, you know, what more can you say? Like, so you can do some flip-de-doos or not in Dana Brooke's case. And, So I guess Eva Marie won't be any worse than that level, you know, in the ring.
No.
But, ooh, man, it's not going to solve the problem with the women's division there on Raw.
No, it's not. No, it's not at all.
So.
Well, speaking of women, I think we probably could move on over to the women of SmackDown. And the opening six-person tag match with Bianca Belair and the Street Profits against Bayley and Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode, who I and no one else will ever call them by that name, by the name they would like to be called, to be referred to as. You know, no one does. Not even Michael Cole will say it. Hell, even McAfee won't say it.
Because they know how douchey it is.
But a fine opening bout for SmackDown that accomplished both objectives of getting the Street Profits a win over Ziggler and Rude and getting Bayley and Bianca in the ring together. If all but briefly.
Yeah, this was just a mission accomplished kind of situation. Good way to get everyone together so that they don't need to have singles matches or just a singles confrontation. And move things along, which is, it's a fine way to use talent. Like, it's not brain surgery sometimes. Really shouldn't be most of the time, but you'd never know. And then we got the ladies were more featured even more. We got Tamina and Natalya taking on Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, none of this will ever end, will it? I mean, I'll give them some credit. They're really trying. Especially Tamina and Nia are really trying to make their familial issue something. They're taking every opportunity they can, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Talking Smack, to really play this up. Their match at WrestleMania was better than it had any right to be, I would say. Their match at WrestleMania was better than it had any right to be, I would say, but I'm still struggling to care about any of this.
It seemed like WrestleMania was the time to give Tamina and Natalya a big win, honestly. So it seems a little past time if that's what you wanted to do. It also seemed to me like if you really wanted to let Nia and Shayna back into the singles division, which would be something that would actually help the women's division, it seemed like you should have passed the belts to Tamina and Natalya already. I wouldn't mind still if they do that because, again, I think that that would be a net benefit to get Shayna and Nia apart. Just their weird bickering kind of works, I guess, now. Like, they've kind of found some common ground in the bickering department. But it's still not worth the damage that's happening to the women's division in general because of it. Like, they definitely need those two bodies who can wrestle and can hold up their end of, talking segments. Honestly.
Yeah, they absolutely can. Yeah, there's no reason to keep them locked on the tag team division. Shayna in particular would be a good opponent for Rhea or whoever leaves this triple threat match with the women's championship if they are already souring on the Rhea Ripley experiment after one particularly rough night the night after WrestleMania. Shayna would be a great contender for anybody. Nia size is always a threat and someone you could get a B pay-per-view out of as well. It's time to move on from them as tag team champions and I guess Natty and Tamina are as good as anything else. Oh my god, they'd be on both shows. Natty on both shows. Oh my god,
that is the only upside I see to that whole thing, honestly.
You mean downside? You mean downside?
Yeah, well, you were talking about not being interested in the feud. I'm still not really interested in the feud, but yeah, them being on both shows is definitely a downside. But hopefully, it would give, to me, it would give people more of a realistic chance of beating the champions, even if you can kind of rightfully sell one of them as a heel, is a monster still. Yeah, like, no, Tamina is a more approachable monster to slay than Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler.
I agree completely, yes. You know, Natty's always there to take the fall if need be, if you want to protect Tamina, yeah.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, but although, I guess, coming up on Raw in the next, possibly like right now, I guess, the Nia and Shayna versus Naomi and Lana part 200 is taking place, so who knows what will happen there. But yeah, no, once again, these women's tag team championships, they started out as such a good idea, and they've essentially been an albatross ever since.
Yeah, it's been a real albatross, just in general. Yeah, they don't have enough women, and they don't give them enough TV time, I do think that this is a good example. Like, I do feel like SmackDown usually has at least a couple of segments with the ladies. It's kind of bad that 9 times out of 10 Raw gets to segments with the ladies, but it's an extra hour, so you should at least get a third one.
Yeah.
That doesn't always come. And it, you know, it hinders any kind of level of development. I mean, I guess even if I'm not going to buy a Dana Brooke in the ring, maybe if you sell her a little bit better as a personality, it might draw some level of interest. So, yeah. Yeah. That's all there is. And I don't know, was there anything else on SmackDown that you wanted to get to that we don't normally get to? The nooks and crannies of SmackDown?
No. I think we can move on to our good friends over at Absolute Intense Wrestling.
Yeah, not only are they doing the Go for Broke shows on IWTV on Tuesday nights, which are pre-recorded and wholly separate from our understanding, from the pay-per-views, I guess you would call them, that they had Thursday and Friday night. The first one was Hello Cleveland. And I ended up catching the back half of this live. And that started off with Dominic Greene against Lee Moriarty. And, you know, I might have spoiled myself and watched the best match of the weekend first, without anything else there. I really had a good time with that particular matchup. Was there any matchup that really stood out to you over the course of the two evenings of the shows?
I would agree with you. I would say it was that match. I said that match was the best match of the entire week, two nights worth of shows. It's not really a weekend because it's Thursday and Friday, but yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, that was the best wrestling match over the course of the two nights. Two of AIW's best in-ring performers. Lee Moriarty has become something of a commodity on the independent circuit. You know, AIW, I think being AIW matches with with Alex Shelley in 2019 being his coming out party of sorts. And you know, Dominic Greeny is an AIW stalwart who is who's proven himself quite adept in bigger matches. This was a showcase for both guys, which worked out really well. He could have pretty much flipped the coin as far as who was going to win this match, but it went to Greeny, and it was very, very well done.
He seems to be the one that maybe might be sticking around a little bit more. So I feel
he's got roots in Cleveland. He's
he had been with MLW though, so he hadn't been with AIW as much after that.
Well, AIW has only run 4 shows and.
That has been part of it, but even before then, Greeny hadn't. There had been some times where he wasn't on the show, even though he was still helping to run the school, as far as I know.
Right. I think it seems like Greeny's until that big offer comes is gonna be always giving his time to the old Cleveland office.
Yeah. We did get, I will admit, AIW does an interesting job of bringing in older talents and gimmick talents. And we definitely got that a little bit early in this card, which I did go back and watch today, because we had Swoggle featured in one match. Was there at least an entertainment level there for you in that matchup with Wes Barkley?
There was a lot of entertainment. I enjoyed that a lot. It was good. It was good to use the Swoggle. Good use of Wes Barkley as the manager who wrestles occasionally, but gets beat up even by the little person. Yeah, no, that match was a lot of fun.
They mentioned kind of being under a circus tent, and I do think that they provide more of that atmosphere than. The WWE does sometimes. Because another feature guy that they brought in ended up being Shane Douglas, who closed out the first half of the show there.
Yeah, no, Shane Douglas was a nice surprise. Once again, AIW does a lot of ECW-style things, a lot of inspiration there. Shane's worked AIW multiple times in the past. I did listen to the Card is Going to Change podcast about at least the first half of this two-night show, which is, Hello Cleveland. I understand why John Thorne likes to bring in Shane Douglas. I understand why the crowd pops for him, upon his entrance. It was a very identifiable theme in the ECW days as well. I understand that what he brings to the table as a veteran in the locker room, but at his age and his current condition, the match just went too long for my liking.
Unfortunately, you kind of end up giving him that much time because he's Shane Douglas, but it was not completely necessary. The upside was that Derek Dillinger, his opponent, did end up going over in this situation. So, good on him for picking up a nice W along the way without having to harm anyone on the main roster.
Yeah, was good. That was fun. Good for Shane Douglas showing up and doing the J-O-B.
Circus top performers also means, you know, you've got to enjoy a little bit of the old hardcore match when you watch an AIW event. And the first one that really popped off was Matthew Justice versus Kaplan the first night.
Yeah, this was a hell of a spectacle right here. This match was a lot. they did a lot. It was, yeah. It wasn't always pretty. You could argue it was mostly not pretty. Entertaining as hell though. They both really brought it. Once again, not the smoothest match you'll ever see, but you know, it popped the crowd huge. You know, it was definitely an AIW flavored match. For me, the jury is still out on Kaplan. I'm not all entirely comfortable watching someone that heavy move about. Who just doesn't look. He just didn't look healthy to me, and it was a little concerning. Now, I'm not the guy's cardiologist. I'm not a doctor or anything, so maybe he's fine.
Well, the crazy thing is he lost, I want to say, 50 pounds or something like that, and he's still a very large gentleman. Yeah, because I definitely went, wow, like, because I think it was in his video. Did he mention that in his video for on Go for Broke, I want to say?
So,
even though they're separate, it does kind of provide you with some information. And, yeah, I feel like he mentioned it on there, and it's just like, he is not terribly tall. Like, he's one of those guys that, I was going to compare him to Bronson Reed, but Bronson Reed is still almost 6 foot tall.
Bronson Reed is definitely lighter on his feet and moves better than Kaplan. There's just something that he just looked like I don't know if anyone's ever experienced an obese family member or friend, and actually watching them, it just looks like they're struggling with every step. That's what it bordered on to me. It wasn't an agile big man like Kevin Owens or someone even bigger or even early Yokozuna. You know, just somebody who you can tell was still somewhat light on his feet. But once again, can't say the match wasn't entertaining.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun. Like, it really was. It was extremely enjoyable. And another definite part of the AIW shows, they love a good scramble, and this time it involved tag teams. So we got the Philly Merino Experience, who are the champions, taking on the Bitcoin Boys, 40 Acres, and Bulking Season. If I need to rattle off all the names, we're going to be here for a long, long time. what did you think of this? It's always a lot when... the tag team match is the designated scramble match, just because there are eight people involved.
Yeah, no, and AIW's tag team scene has never been one that I've particularly gotten into since I began watching these AIW streaming shows. Yeah, it was fine. You know, PME are fine tag team champions for right now. But this was nothing to write home about for me.
Yeah. It was just there. There was nothing really wrong, but like you said, like it's there is no hierarchy in the tag team division, so it's hard to get too wrapped up in it. And it would have been kind of an out of the blue title change had the Philly Marino experience not won that one. We wrapped up both nights with title defense by one young Joshua Bishop. The first night was against Mance Warner.
Yeah, this was interesting on a number of levels. This felt like it didn't rise up to the level it should have to me. And there seems to be maybe other reasons why. Here's a weird thing about AIW. An AIW can have gimmick matches up and violent gimmick matches up and down the card, and it's great fun. It's a great show all around. AIW can do two of those types of matches, and the first one gets all the reaction, and the second one can fall on deaf ears. I did not feel like this match had a great crowd heat, and I'm also feeling that Mance Warner is definitely a guy who suffered from the relative inactivity of the last year. He had a lot of momentum, that had been building for a year or two, heading into what would have been WrestleMania weekend 2020. And it just, people still, they still pop for the entrance, they still sing along. But it felt like something was missing.
It wasn't quite as much fun as the Kaplan Injustice match for sure. And I'm with you. Like something felt a little bit flat about it, but I'm not sure that there was that glaring hole that you go, this is what the problem was. You know what I mean?
Right.
It could be that. Like, it could be what you're talking about, that Mance Warner really was kind of up there for, really being at the top of the indies. And, I don't feel like he's done that much with the kind of few indies that have popped up here and there.
Yeah, no, I don't think he has. I know he has publicly, demanded his release from MLW, but unlike others, Court Bauer has not given it to him, so that's been kind of a thorn of it, a sticking point with him. But yeah, something just didn't feel off, just didn't feel right. Yeah, it's still a big name, and it was still a good win for Joshua Bishop, was absolutely jacked heading into this. Jacked and oiled up. That is a man who is looking to get signed.
There are some people you're just like, it's got to just be a matter of time. And I'm not sure if there is an actual number. I kind of joked on Twitter that he had added 20 pounds of muscle, but he was a big framed kid to start with. He does not look like he was wasting his time during the pandemic.
No, not at all.
Good on him for not wasting his own time and just kind of dedicating it to getting big in the meantime. So, the way that he wrestles, You know, it helps out to have even more muscle when you're the muscle and you add muscle. That is not really a bad thing.
No, not at all.
The second night was named "Is This Something You Might Be Interested In?" And there's this one beer company here in town, Hoofhearted, who I feel like occasionally makes names that are this long for a beer. And this kind of title reminded me of that. But we got Kaplan in a much shorter match against Levi Everett to start things off. So he got to pick up a nice little win there to start things off. Another returning star, so to speak, would have been one Allison Kay. The women have not been featured that much in AIW recently, but she came back and ended up wrestling Jocelyn Navarro, who I was not terribly familiar with.
No, she has not been in a lot of shows. I don't even remember if she was starting to come around towards the beginning of 2020, heading into what would have been the Thunder in Paradise show in 2020 that ended up happening in Indianapolis. She's relatively new. She did get a big pop on night one when she low-blowed and attacked the Duke. So, and Don Thorne gave her that credit for her actually being way more over than she'd ever been in an AIW show for her match with Allison Kay. And once again, they had a fine match. The returning stars certainly, as we'll talk about the other one, got wins over the AIW regulars. In this case, not a big deal. As I guess technically Shayna Baszler is still the AEW Women's Champion.
That I believe is still technically true.
So again, AEW does not. Since then, AEW has not had a women's matches on every show. As they've tried to figure out what they're going to do with that whole situation. So I think it's fine. Allison Kay, not particularly a favorite of mine, or someone who's really stuck out to me in any of the other places she's been. But once again, but she was very, that's where I made a point of saying that she's very important to the history of AIW in the early days. So once again, it was a good little win. Nothing too spectacular, though.
Yeah, we ended up, it seemed like we were going to get a Tommy Rich versus Mance Warner match, but that ended up morphing into an 8-man match, and that was probably for the best.
That was absolutely for the best. I mean, Tommy Rich was it was a fun surprise. They didn't really ask a lot of him. The match turned into an all-out brawl. In AIW canon, it's always good for the Duke to get his comeuppance. So, and have Tommy Rich get that pin. Yeah, that was fun stuff.
Yeah, it was an enjoyable match. No one's gonna write about match of the year for that, but it was enjoyable. We ended up getting a scramble match to start things off on the back end of this card. Big Twan Tucker ends up getting the win over Braden Lee, Casey Carrington, TKD, Riley Rose, and Derek Dillinger, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, not all. AEW likes to do these scramble matches. They're ideal things to put on after intermission. With the logic being, everyone hasn't found themselves in their seats yet, so you don't put on anything that's storyline of storyline importance, but is something to get the crowd back into things and get going. So this more than served its purpose.
After that, we ended up 40 Acres versus the main event, who were some newcomers that ended up wrestling both nights of the card.
Yeah, they did, and they were very impressive. I had not been familiar with them at all, even really, and I'm pretty deep into the wrestling Twitter world and people who are very, very, very into independent wrestling and know the players. I have not heard that, seen these names come across my phone screen before.
Yeah, but Duke Davis and Gannon Jones Jr. are the persons in the main event.
Yes, so. they were really impressive. I like what I saw from them. They were able to pick up a win the first night, but on the second night they fell to 40 Acres of Trey Lamar and PB Smooth, who are also a very good team, and another team that has not been AIW Tag Team Champions before. We've definitely noted that AIW has run many of the same Tag Team Championship matches repeatedly. So getting some new teams in the mix is definitely a good thing.
Agreed. Next up, we got another big and one would say the biggest surprise of the weekend. Dominic Greeny ends up taking on one Eddie Kingston in the semi-main event of the second night. Were you surprised when Mr. Kingston showed up for the show?
I was surprised, definitely not expecting it. AEW talent does some independence, but not a lot. So this was definitely, it was a surprise, it was a good surprise. Good to see him here. They made a point of saying that, because the shutting down of all wrestling activity in the state of Ohio, for over a year, combined with how quick everything moved with Eddie Kingston getting his shot to be in AEW and getting signed, and surprisingly becoming a main event level player there, led to him essentially not having any kind of an official farewell in AIW, as many others have had before him. But he was able to come back for the show and have a hell of a match with Dominic Greeny.
This was a pretty fun brawl. It definitely differed in style from Greeny's match the previous evening, which was a little more of a technical affair. But both of them were highly entertaining. And, it was nice that they did really tell the story about Eddie Kingston getting to say goodbye to the AIW crowd. I do feel like AEW was pretty good about letting people do such things. So it was a fun surprise to see. It also led to probably John Thorne's most famous tweet at this point, when they were at, I can't remember the establishment, and I'm going to say Denny's because I can't remember the name of the establishment, but the waiter told Eddie Kingston that he bore a striking resemblance to Eddie Kingston, not realizing that he was talking indeed to Eddie Kingston. So
that is a funny story, yes.
Main event, Matthew Justice and Joshua Bishop have been entrenched in a main event war. I believe that this one was the rubber match. Because I want to say that Matthew Justice won the first matchup between the two. But a while back. But then Joshua...
That's going on 2 years ago.
Going on 2 years ago.
I believe that they've had at least 5 singles matches. Now, or however is it going to go? They face each other quite a bit. This is the go-to match for AIW over the last 2 years. They have not... and once again, I was not a big fan of their barbed wire match from Indianapolis. I thought that they just didn't live up to the hype for a barbed wire match. In fact, they spent more time outside than they did rolling around in the barbed wire, which is strange. But this was just their classic AIW brawl all over the building, all sorts of weapons used, all sorts of chaos. There was a door and a table that just wouldn't break.
Oh my gosh. And that was because Bill Alfonso was trying to slam Wes Barkley through one of them and it wouldn't break.
Yeah, neither of them had to wait.
And then I feel like Joshua Bishop was trying to put Matt Justice through a non-gimmicked table because I could swear I actually saw, you know, the regular supports that are on one of those folding tables, because they normally take out some, basically, the beams to the tables to make them more breakable. And they looked like they were in, and that also looked quite painful. Maybe some of the more painful spots were the spots where the things did not break. I kind of felt bad for Wes Barkley having to take 3 bumps through, not through a door. If I'm not mistaken, that's got to be a pretty tough existence for someone selling all 3 of those. Salute to you, Wes Barkley, for going through that. Oh, man. But I would have to think that this win, to me, would close this chapter of AIW with Matthew Justice and Josh Bishop. As much as these matches have been pretty wild and they've done a very good job of making them as separate as they could, even if maybe, you know, some of them, like the barbed wire one, didn't live up to maybe the hype. This seems like a final feud, and that Bishop should have someone else challenging him the next time around.
Yeah, I agree completely. Yes, this definitely felt like AIW moving on from this. Hell of a way to go out, though. Very, very memorable match.
Okie doke. Well, I think that does it for the show. We got half SmackDown, half AIW. I was doing it all while drinking Sideswipe Brewing Sticky Wicket, OYO Rye Barrel Aged Barley Wine. This has definitely been a beer that I got a 4-pack of it because it is, if I'm not mistaken, 13% alcohol. So they only gave me a 4-pack of that instead of a 6-pack. How dare they? It's because it's very high in alcohol, but it is extremely tasty, and I think I'm going to venture out of my way to try more barley wines in the meantime. So that is the opinion of one at DeFrango 11. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can download us on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or pretty much any fine purveyor of podcasts. So have a good night, grandkids.
Later.